We're doing a quick review. So the Torah begins with the story of Bereishis. The Torah begins with telling us about creation. We know that the creation, we commemorate that the world was created in 6 days and God rested on the seventh day every Shabbat when we make Kiddush. The Torah gives us great detail about how creation happened. We don't exactly understand, but we do infer certain things halachically, like that the fish were created from the water, and the fish are not fleshiks. The grasshoppers aren't fleshiks, right? We learn about how man was created in the mitzvah of Pru Urvu. All the mitzvahs we're going to learn before Matan Torah, before the Torah was given, the seven Noahid laws, the mitzvah of Gid Anashe, Bris Mila, the Jews were recommanded when the Torah was given. The Jews were commanded a second time. Our commandment does not stem from the commandment of creation. So we're told that the Torah was created in 6 days, and then on the seventh day, Hashem rested. Vayichulu, God finished creating the heavens and the earth. God blessed the seventh day, gave it holiness, and we discussed how Adam was created and he sinned and he was supposed to die on the seventh day of Shabbos, and Shabbos came to his protection, and Adam sang a song in praise of Shabbos. Shabbos said, God, you said I'm going to be holy, is this my holiness that death will be introduced to the world on my day? And so God changed the decree that a day is like a day in God's time. We know a day in God's time, Ke'elef Shanim Benecha Ki'yom Etmol, Davra Melech says, a day in God's time is like 1,000 years. So God gave Adam 1,000 years to live. God creates Adam and Eve. Eve is created from Adam's limb when Adam is asleep, either from Adam's tail or Adam's rib, Adam's opposite side, different opinions in the Gemara, that either Adam was two-faced, on one side he was male, on the other side he was female, and God puts him to sleep because if he'd see how Chava, Eve, was created from him, then he would be disgusted with her. So God puts him to sleep and then creates Chava, and when he awakens, he sees her. Now Adam tried marrying all the animals, and none of them he felt a connection with until he met Eve. Then he said, Zotapa! This time, Etzem Atzamaya, bone of my bones, Uvasam Yipsari, flesh from my flesh. That's why she's called Isha, because she is taken from Adam. Adam was created from the holiest earth in the world. We know Hashem took from the earth of the Kodesh HaKodashim and formed Adam. And from Adam, Isha was formed. The Nachash was created to serve Adam and Chava, this special snake that had feet and was exceptionally smart and cunning, and he was supposed to be a servant to Adam and Chava. He saw Adam and Chava mating and was jealous. He wanted Chava to himself, and so he came to Chava and had relations with her and pushed her to the tree, started talking to Chava and said to her, what did God tell you? And in talking to her, Chava repeated what Adam had told her, that we're not even allowed to touch the tree of the forbidden fruit. There is a machloket lishonim. Did she know which tree it was? Was that tree different than all the other trees, or was that tree like any other tree? Just that God said, that tree you don't touch. That tree, the fruits are special. Was it an unusual fruit, or was it a fruit like the others? What fruit was on the Eitz Hadas? Was it grain? Was it really grain that was growing? That was the forbidden fruit? Was it grapes? And that's why we make Kiddush on wine Friday night, to commemorate that Adam sinned with wine on Friday night and we sanctified the wine on Friday night. Was it figs? There are different opinions in Chazal. What was the Eitz Hadas? So the Nachash hears from Chava that God said, don't even touch the tree. He pushes her toward the tree. The tree yells out, don't touch me, al tevaini regel gaava, the verse in Tehillim. And when Chava touches him, the snake says, you see, you didn't die when you touched it, now eat it. She eats it, and she feels death approaching. She sees the angel of death. She says, now I'm going to die, and Adam will marry someone else. No way. So she brings the fruit to Adam, and she gives it to him to eat, and he eats from the fruit, and when he eats it, he feels different. And he said, what'd you give me? Is this from the forbidden fruit? And now they both think they're going to die, and they're cognizant of the fact that they're naked. They no longer have the mitzvah that God had given them. They've transgressed. They hear God passing, they go and hide in the tree, and we know the conversation. God asks them, why'd you eat? Adam says, the woman, before she was here, I was all right. And here Adam sins. He shows that he doesn't have appreciation for the woman. So to speak, he's blaming God. The woman you gave me, she caused me to sin. God asks the woman, what happened? And the woman says, the Nachash, he's the one that caused me to sin. And God turns to the Nachash, and God knows the Nachash is behind it all, and doesn't even ask him, because we have a rule that when someone causes other people to sin, and he's cunning, and his intent is to cause others to sin, we don't try to find any room for exonerating him. So the Nachash is cursed, that there'll be enmity between him and mankind. He loses his feet. He goes on the ground. God says, I don't want to talk to you. Everything's going to taste like dust to you. And Chava is cursed. Her 10 curses. It's going to be painful for her to have children. She's going to have a relationship with her husband where she's always missing him. And he's going to have control over the home. And Adam is cursed that he's going to have to work the ground, and he'll sweat in the work, and it's going to be difficult. And Adam weeps. He says, God, you mean that I and the animals will eat from the same trough? And God, so to speak, lightens the curse to an extent that Adam doesn't eat exactly what animals eat. Adam is chased out of Gan Eden. The heavenly plan was that Adam would not stay in Gan Eden. This was part of the heavenly plan. We weren't supposed to stay in Gan Eden forever. And we discussed why this was the heavenly plan, that we begin in Gan Eden, we leave Gan Eden, only to keep thinking about going back to Gan Eden. And Adam has children, Cain and Hevel, and Chazal say that Cain, we saw, was wicked. According to one opinion, Cain came from the sperm of the snake. Cain and Hevel are working. Cain has fruits. Cain brings an offering from his fruit, from the poor fruit. Hevel brings from the best sheep. God takes a liking to Hevel's offering and not Cain's. Cain is upset, and God tells him, are you upset? If you do better, fine. If not, then it's your sin. And Cain picks a fight with Hevel, and he kills him. And God asks him, where is Hevel? And he says, my brother's keeper. God tells him, you should know, all the blood of him and his offsprings, they all yell to me from the ground. And from here we derive the concept that every person is like a whole world. Because if you think about it, the world began with Adam and Eve, Cain and Hevel. When Cain killed Hevel, we lost half the world. And the world population would have doubled if not for Cain's killing Hevel. And that's the potential that every person has. So God tells him he's going to be cursed. He'll have to travel to and fro. Cain has a child. He names him Chanoch. Chanoch has Irad, etc. We have 10 generations. And in those 10 generations, mankind deteriorates. They start serving idols. And we discussed how they started serving idols initially. They said, God is too great. We can't serve him directly. We'll serve his servants, the stars, and the other forces. And eventually it evolved to idol worship. The people who had power took advantage of their power. They take whatever women they wanted. And God sees that man is focusing on worldly pleasures and sinning and stealing from one another. And God, so to speak, is saddened that he created man this way and says, I'll wipe him out. The only one that finds favor is Noah. And so Noah, God tells Noah, I'm going to destroy the land. Build yourself an ark. Noah spends 120 years building the ark. And during those 120 years, he tells the people, repent, repent, and the people don't listen. He tells them God's going to bring a flood, no one's listening. He builds this huge ark. God tells him to take two of each of the non-pure animals, male and female, two each, and of the pure animals, seven each. And then God starts bringing the flood. Even Noah is waiting until the rain is really coming down. Only then does he go into the ark. All the animals are miraculously brought to his ark, and they miraculously fit, and somehow he has food for all of them. We discussed the three levels of the ark, where he lived, where the animals were, where the garbage was, and they had this source of light, either a window or a special rock. Noah enters the ark, and the women promised him, if there's really a flood, we'll destroy your ark. God sends wild animals to protect the ark. The flood goes on for 40 days and 40 nights. There's a machlokas whether it was throughout the world or only limited to a certain location. When the flood started, so there were giants, and they said, we'll just stop. If the waters come from above, we'll climb on high mountains. And if they come from below, we'll put our feet over the waters. And God makes the waters coming from below boiling hot, so that when they try to stuff up the wellsprings coming up from below, they're burning their feet and they can't do that. Everything's destroyed. Noah is in the ark, and one day Noah is late in bringing the food to the lion, and the lion hits him, and Noah is spitting up blood. He's working very, very hard, and he's wounded. So the waters keep coming down, and finally, after 40 days, they stop, and slowly the water settles. Noah wants to see if the waters have completely settled. He wants to send the raven, and the raven doesn't trust Noah that he won't take his mate, so the raven refuses. He sends the pigeon, and the first time the pigeon comes back, it hasn't found any place to land. The second time, after 7 days, it comes back, with a branch of an olive tree, indicating I'd rather my food be bitter like the olive branch, like the olive leaves and given from God, than sweet and given from you. And 7 days later, he sends out the dove and it doesn't come back. And finally, the water is dry. Noah removes the roof off the ark, and they see that all of the land is destroyed. So they come out of the ark. God tells them, you, your wife, your children, and their wives come out of the ark. And when they come out of the ark, so they are permitted again to mate. Inside the ark, we know the cat made it, and Canaan made it. They transgressed. Ham made it. I'm sorry. Ham made it. Noah brings a sacrifice, and God says, I make a treaty, I won't destroy the whole world with the flood again, and that is what's represented by the rainbow. The rainbow represents that. We have a special blessing when we see a rainbow, that God keeps his promise that he won't destroy the world with the flood. God blesses Noah and his children with pru urvu. They have a commandment now to again procreate. And now they are given permission to eat meat. Until then, they weren't allowed to eat meat. They were partial vegetarians. They're also told that they're not allowed to kill one another, and a person's not allowed to take his own life. Noah plants a vineyard. He drinks from the wine. He gets drunk. His son Ham and his grandson Canaan, they say, why do we leave him around? This old man, he'll have more kids. We'll have to divide up the land with more kids. So they castrate him. According to another opinion, they rape him. He wakes up. He realizes what they did, and he curses them. He says they're all going to be servants. They're going to be slaves. And Canaan is cursed to be a slave. Shem and Yefet, his two other children, when they hear about their father's shame, that he's naked in the tent, they go backwards. They don't want to see their father's shame. They walk backwards with a blanket, and they cover him. Noah passes away, and 10 generations later, we have Avram. The Torah records the generations and the involvement of the different nations, and this is one of the signs that Moshe gave to the Jewish people, that God sent him, that he can trace back each nation all the way to their roots. We know Mitzrayim was the son of Canaan, right? Canaan was the son of Ham. Mitzrayim was a person. He started the country of Mitzrayim. So we have the different countries, Gomer, Magog, Madai, Yavon, Greece, Ashkenaz, Germany. The different countries and peoples are traced back in our Parsha all the way back to Noah.
Which is this Ashkenaz?
What?
Ashkenaz, which is Ashkenaz?
Ashkenaz is Germany.
Ah, Germany.
Yeah. Okay, so they unify and they decide we're building a one tower that's going to be awesome, and everyone who sees it will have awe of the one king, and the one king is going to be Nimrod, who's also known as Amraphel, and his intent is to have idol worship. He's proclaimed himself a god, and everyone's unified with this intent. Now, if they get away with this, then where is Avram and other God-fearing people going to go? Everyone's unified in idol worship. So God sees that everyone's unified, and God says this isn't good. So God confuses the languages, and from there we have the 70 languages, and that's why that place is called Bavel, because Bavel, from the word Balal, Hashem mixed the languages over there. We go 10 generations from Noah, and we hit Avram. Avram is told by God, go to the land of Israel. This is after he went to the land of Israel at age 75, and had the vision of that he's going to have offsprings, and the vision of the Bris ben Absarim. God makes a pact with him that his children are going to go down to Egypt, and ultimately they'll come out 4 generations later and inherit the land of Israel. After Abraham has this vision, he goes back to Ur Kasdim, and then God tells him, now go to the land of Israel, go to the land which I will show you. And Abraham starts traveling, and God doesn't tell him right away which land it is. This is one of the 10 tests Avram is going to have. That God doesn't tell him which land he's going to. So he starts traveling, and God tells him, even though ordinarily when you travel, so you're not as famous, you don't get wealthy, you lose your wealth, you don't have children, you will have blessing. I'll make you famous, you'll have children, you'll have wealth. Travel. And those who bless you will be blessed, those who curse you will be cursed. And you'll be a source of blessing to all mankind. So Avram travels, he takes his nephew, who is also his brother-in-law, Lot, because he married his niece. Sarah is Avram's niece. When Avram was a child, so he had a brother, Haran, who was the father of Lot and Sarah. And when everyone else was serving idols, Avram refused. So they brought him before the king, before Nimrod. And Nimrod said to Haran, do you bow to idols or not? So Haran said, I don't know yet. Let's see what Avram says. Avram says, I don't. So they threw him into a burning furnace, and Avram walked out alive. And when Haran saw this, Haran said, okay, I'm with him. I don't believe in this idol either. They threw him into the furnace, and he died. Because God doesn't save people who go in on with the thought, okay, God will save me. Avram said, I believe in one God. I don't believe in these idols. So when Avram was thrown into the furnace, he walked out alive. Haran said, I don't know yet. And after the miracle, he said, okay, I'm with Avram. So when he was thrown into the furnace, he died. And he left behind Milcah and Sarah and Lot, those three children of his. And Avram married Sarah and he adopted Lot. Milcah was married. Avram is traveling with his young nephew, Lot. They come to the land of Israel, and first time in world history, there's a famine. Another test. God just told them to come here, and now there's a famine. So Avram travels down to Egypt, and as he's approaching Egypt, he tells Sarah, we're coming to Egypt. Mitzrayim is the son of Canaan. Canaan was cursed. They're all black. We're going to come there, and you're white. You're going to be an exceptional woman in their midst. Everyone's going to recognize how beautiful you are, and they'll kill me and take you. So say that you're my sister, so that things will go well for us there. I won't get killed, and everything will be okay. They come to Egypt. Avram tries hiding her. When they go through the border, they say, what's in this box? He says, doesn't matter, I'll pay whatever you want. They say, we'll equate it with gold. He says, okay, I'll pay taxes for gold. They say, then it must be jewels. He says, I'll pay for jewels. They say, okay, it must be more precious. Open up, we want to see what's in it. They open the box, they see Sarah. They see Sarah, they say, ooh, this one's fit for a king. They send word to Paro, there's an amazing woman here, she's for you. When Paro hears about this, so she's abducted, she's taken to Paro. Avram is supposedly Sarah's brother, so they give him all kinds of sheep and cattle. Now this is exceptional, think about it. Sarah's over 70 years old. She's such a good looking lady. So we're going to see when we start learning Megillas Esther that such things happen. Esther was also over 70 years old, and yet Achashverosh fell for her. So Sarah is given exceptional beauty, and Paro is punished. An angel comes, and whenever Sarah tells him hit him, he hits him. So Sarah tells Paro, I'm a married woman, don't come near me. And Paro doesn't listen. So Sarah tells an angel, hit him, don't let him. So the angel hits him. Think of this in contradistinction with Esther. Esther, who's also a pious woman, doesn't have this angel to protect her. Esther has to live with this beast called Achashverosh, and she lives for years with Achashverosh. We're going to discuss that in the chapter of Tehillim, Eli Eli Lama Zavtani. When Esther turns to God, she says, God, why have you left me? Why have you forsaken me? Because Esther doesn't have the angel like Sarah has to protect her.
This boy took her by force.
Sarah was also taken by force. So Esther turns to God. Sarah turns to God. She says, what did I do? Avram brought me here. Avram said she's my sister. He's out there and I'm in here. And so God protects Sarah. And Paro gets punished. And Pharaoh the next morning calls Avram and he says, what'd you do to me? Why didn't you tell me she's your wife? Why'd you tell me she was your sister? Take her, get out of here. In Egypt you can't stick around, you can't trust my people not to take her. So Pharaoh sends his men and they escort Avram and Sarah outside, out of Egypt. Avram comes out of Egypt and now he's got a lot of cattle and wealth. And he goes back and he repays all his loans. And he comes back to the land of Israel. And all the way, he's teaching people about monotheism. Lot's also made it wealthy. And now Lot's shepherds, they let their cattle graze in everyone's land. They say, God promised it to Avram. Avram doesn't have any kids. So obviously Lot's going to inherit this land. Avram's servants, they put muzzles on their animals. They say, we can't graze on other people's land. So they're fighting with one another. Avram's servants say, you can't do that. It's not your land. And Lot's servants say, yeah, God promised it to Avram. So Lot's servants are extra pious. Often in life, the biggest cheaters present themselves as being extra pious. Lot's shepherds, they say, we believe in God. God said that Avram will have it, and who's going to inherit Avram but Lot? So they're grazing, and Avram sees that there are fights erupting, and he's having fights with Lot. So he tells Lot, why should we argue? The land's big. You go whichever way you want. I'm sticking over here. You go this way, that way. I want this portion. So Lot is attracted to the Sodomites and their ancestral ways. Lot's attracted to their lust and their way of life. So Lot chooses to go with them, and they separate. Lot says, "Let me free of Avram's religion. Let me free of Avram's way of life. I want to go live with them. So he's going from Avram all the way down to the Sodomites. But he's still going to retain some of the stuff he learned from Avram. He's still going to take in guests. Now, once Lot leaves, God's a little bit upset at Avram. God says, Avram, everyone you can be nice to. Everyone has room in your home. Your own nephew, you can't make up with. Your own nephew, he travels away. So God appears to Avram and tells him, look around, this land is all going to be yours and your offspring's, and don't think like Lot claimed. Your offspring, you're going to have offspring and they're going to flourish like the earth of the land, just like everyone steps on the earth throughout their life. Your offspring's also will have periods where people step on them. But ultimately, just like the earth overtakes the man, so too the earth will overtake all those that step on them. Your offsprings will be on top and then. And just like no one can count, God could know how much earth there is, but no human can count the earth. So too, no human can count, will be able to count your offsprings. Travel the land, and this is a way of purchasing it. By traveling it, you're acquiring it. So Avram starts traveling, and he's going to the plains of Mamre in Hebron. And there's been a constant struggle between the four kings. The head of them was Amraphel, a nickname for Nimrod. He was the king of Babylon. And he has his three men with him, and they used to have rulership over the Sodomites and their partners, five kings. So these four kings, they gather by the area of Yam HaMelach, which was a place that they used to quarry seed from, and they have a war. And in this war, the Sodomites have giants joining them in war. But Nimrod and his men are very powerful, and they conquer these five kings. And their goal in conquering these five kings is they've heard that Lot went to live there, and they figure we'll capture Lot. And after Lot, we'll come after Avram. Once we capture Lot, Avram will come to us. So they come and they capture them, and Avram gets word that his nephew's been captured. So he goes to save him, and he has his miraculous sand, and when he throws it, it turns into spears and arrows, and he throws that at the kings with his one servant Eliezer, and he defeats these four kings. And then the king of Sodom comes to him and says, give me my men, you keep the wealth. And Avram says, no, I'm not taking the wealth, I'm not taking your men. And God was upset at him for that. God said, you had the option of taking all those people and teaching them about Judaism. You gave them back to the king of Sodom. What'd you do that for? You don't want the wealth? That's fine, that's good. But the people, you could have taught them about monotheism. So Avram made a mistake here. Avram's on his way back, and the Shem, some of his children were killed in this war. Shem, the son of Noach, he's the king of Jerusalem. He's called Malkitzedek. He comes out to greet Avram with bread and wine, and he blesses him. But he makes a mistake. He blesses Avram, and then he blesses God. He says, blessed is Avram to God who created the world, and blessed is God that gave you this victory. And Avram says, no, it doesn't work that way. And because Shem blessed Avram before he blessed God, he lost the right to the kahuna. Shem was the first Kohen, and he could have maintained that in his family, but he didn't. Now, this is a bit problematic, because Avram came from Shem, and all Kohanim come from Avram. But there could have been a more direct connection. It wasn't in his merit, it was in Avram's merit that Kohanim come from Avram. Avram tells the king of Sodom, the only thing I want is Aner, Eshkol, and Mamre, they watched over my goods while I went out to war, pay them their dues. And from here we learn a concept in Halacha, that when we go to war, we say the people who stayed behind and watched the camp, they also get a percent of the spoils, because without them we couldn't have won the war.
But
if then, it's quick, you gotta rush. Yeah.
But then he take children himself.
Could be. There is such a medrash. Yeah. There is such a medrash. Okay. God tells Avram, don't. Avram's worried. He just had these great miracles. God says, don't worry. I'm protecting you. You'll have a lot of wages still to come. And Avram says, what are you gonna give me, God? I'm childless. You haven't given me a kid. Who's going to inherit me? My servant? And God tells him, no, he won't. You will have a son who will inherit you. And God took him out, and God told him, look, the stars, can he count them? And Avram said, I can. So he says, that's how your children's going to be, and he believes in God. God tells him, stop looking at your astrology. You're a master astrologer. Avram can't have children. Avraham could. And God tells him, he changes his name. No, we're going to get to that. we're not yet up to the name change. God tells him he's going to inherit the tremendous land of Israel. Sarai can't have children, so she takes the gift that she was given by Paro. After Paro abducted her, he gave her his daughter from a maid. Her name was Hagar, and Paro told her, I want you to know these are righteous people. You're better off being a maid in their house than a princess in my house. So Hagar is a righteous person, and she comes and Sarai tells Avraham, I can't have children, so have relations with my maid, and then we'll have children, and that'll be my continuum. So Avraham listens to Sarai. Sarai initiated this. Sarai gives him the maid. After 10 years, they've been living in Israel, and they haven't had children. From here, we derive the halacha that one who can't have children waits 10 years. If he makes aliyah, so we say the merit of Israel might change it. You start to count again. You start to count from the time he came to Israel. That's why the Torah stresses after they were in Israel for 10 years and didn't have children. That's when Sarai gave up. Didn't give up, but she said, "Okay, now take Hagar." So Hagar gets pregnant. And she looks at Sarai and she says, I became pregnant, 1, 2, 3. Must be Avram's the tzaddik I thought he was, and Sarai isn't the tzaddik I thought she was. How come she didn't merit to have children, and I, in 1 second, I get pregnant? So she starts looking down at Sarai. And Sarai comes to Avram and she says, I'm upset at you. I gave you my maid. Now that she's upset, now that she's pregnant, she treats me lightly. God should judge between us. Our sages say, whoever says God should judge between us, God judges them first. Because Sarai said the statement, she died first. God said, oh, you're telling me to judge between you? You think you're so righteous? So God judges the one who said it first. So Sarai made a mistake here when she said this to Abram. She was righteous, but who can stand up to God's the God's judgment? So Abram tells Sarai, well, what do you want? She's your maid. Do whatever makes sense to you. So Sarai treats her badly, and Hagar can't take it. She runs away. She's run away, and an angel appears to her. We see she's on some level if angels appear to her. And he tells her, Hagar, you maid of Sarai. He identifies her and he reminds her what's her position in life. He tells her, where you come from, where you're going. So she says, okay, he's just told her, remember, you're a maid. So she says, I'm running from Sarai, she's my master. So he tells her, go back to your master, and I'm going to make you have many children, and you're going to have a child, and his name is going to be Yishmael, for God has heard your affliction. Makes us wonder if Yishmael's success isn't attributed in part to the fact that his mother suffered. That's what he says. God has heard your affliction. But you should know he's going to be a pere adam. He's going to be wild and he'll have a human form. He's going to be involved with everyone. He's going to be robbing everyone, and everyone's going to want to get a hand on him. And he'll camp out. He's going to spread out across the land. So she goes back. And she has a child, and Avram, who didn't know about this prophecy, names the child Yishmael. Avram's 88 years old when he has Yishmael. When he's 99, he's 86. When he's 99, 13 years later, Yishmael is 13 years old. God appears to him, and he tells him, I want you to be whole. Avram says, what did I do wrong? God says, you didn't do anything wrong. I want to make a covenant with you. You'll circumcise yourself, and then you'll be whole. And that's going to be a covenant between me and you will be a father of many nations. We're changing your name to Avraham. And you'll multiply and you'll have kings. And this is going to be a covenant between me and your offsprings for eternity. That I am their God, and your God, and their God forever. And I'll give them this land. The Bris gives us a right to this land. One of the reasons that the Yishmaelim have a claim to the land is because they're circumcised. So that's why there's a big question, are we allowed to circumcise them? And God tells Avram, you maintain my covenant, every child, every male in your home should get circumcised. When a child is 8 days old, we circumcise him. Even if you have a servant, we circumcise him. If you look in the Yemenite Sidurim, so they have a blessing, al milas avadim. I guess in Yemen this concept still existed. They still have that blessing. There is such a blessing in halacha. Something like that. And one who doesn't circumcise gets cut off in this world and the world to come. And now God makes a name change for Sarai. Her name's going to be Sarah, and she'll have a child, and that child will multiply into nations and kings. Abraham hears this and he laughs out of joy, and he says in wonderment that 100 years old I'll have a child, and Sarah at 90 years old will have a child. And he asks God, if only Yishmael would be good before you. And God says, no, don't worry, you'll have a child, and you'll call him Yitzchak. You just left, Yitzchak. And I will maintain my treaty with him. And you wanted me to see Yishmael in a good light. Well, I blessed him, and he'll multiply. He'll have 12 great leaders, and he'll be a tremendous nation. But my covenant is with Yitzchak that will be born from Sarah. Next year at this time, God leaves Avram, and Avram takes Yishmael, his son, and his whole all his servants, and all the males in his house. Avram circumcises them, and then he calls Shem, and Shem comes, and they go to Haram Moriah, and over there Avram gets circumcised at the Holy of Holies, as does Yishmael. And Avram is 99 years old, and Yishmael is 13 years old, and Avram in the middle of the day of Yom Kippur has his circumcision. God appears to Avram to visit him. Avram is sitting in pain, and he's sitting at the heat of the day. God's made the day exceptionally hot so that guests won't bother Avram. And Avram's sitting at the entrance to his tent, and God appears to him with a vision of three men. So in the vision, Avram gets up and he runs towards the men, and he sees they're Arabs. So he tells them, maybe you'll come and we'll give you some water, you'll wash your feet, and you'll sit under the shade of the tree, and I'll bring you some bread, and you'll eat by me, and then you'll go on. Now Avram's in pain. He's 3 days after circumcision. He's 99 years old. This isn't an easy feat. When Aner Eshkol and Mamre, his good friends, when they heard he was going to have a circumcision, so I think it was Mamre who went and circumcised himself. He wanted to be the first to do the mitzvah, and he died from it. Mamre died when he did a circumcision. It's not a simple thing to have circumcision at that age in those times. And Avram, nonetheless, when he sees the ability to have guests, he runs towards them, and he offers them bread, but in truth he prepares a much bigger feast. He runs to Sarah and he tells her, sift the flour, mahari, sift the flour. Just a second, there's a page missing here. And prepare matzahs. One opinion in the Medrash is that this all happened on Pesach, because we know Yitzchak was born on Pesach. So if the vision happened on Yom Kippur, like we said earlier, so then Yitzchak was a preemie. He was born after 6 months or so, 7 months. And if the vision happened on Pesach, then Yitzchak was born full term, a year later. So Avram asked Sarah to prepare the food. He prepares them delicious meat, and he tells Yishmael to quick and help him with it. We see Avram's doing chinuch, even though his son is 13 years old, he's also suffering. He tells him, help me out, where we have guests. They give him great food, they give him milk and meat, and now these angels have eaten meat and milk together, so that when Moshe comes to Shemayim and they're going to say, we want the Torah, Moshe's going to tell them, when you're a guest of Avram, you ate meat and milk. You guys don't keep the Torah. We keep the Torah. So Avram has given them meat and milk to eat, and they eat it. And they ask him, where's Sarah? They want to make Sarah more favorable in his eyes after we don't know how many years, but it's been decades that they've been living together. They want to make more shalom bayis between them. They want Avram to remember how modest Sarah is. So they ask him, where's Sarah? And Avram says, she's in the tent, she's modest. Yeah. Okay. Sorry, we gotta cover ground. We gotta go out tonight. They're benching, and we know that the cup of benching has a special segula that it makes people able to have children. So they say, where's Sarah? We gotta send her the cup from benching. That's why the halacha says that after you bench, the cup you bench on, you should send to the wife. And you should know, you could bench over a cup of grape juice if there are only three. If there's only one, you could bench over a cup of wine or a cup of grape juice. You're honoring the blessing with the cup. So if you do it when you're only one, so people will look at you strangely. So don't do it in front of other people. But if you do it when there are three, there's no problem. Now, logically, you should do it. So they say, where's Sarah? We want to send her the cup from benching. So he tells them she's in the tent. So the angel tells him, I'm going to return a year from now, or on the next Yom Tov, a year from now I'm going to return, and Sarah's going to have a child. And Sarah hears this, and Sarah stopped having her period. So she laughs inside, she looks at herself, and she says, I'm all dried out, now I'm going to have a renewal. And Avram's an old man. God appears to Avram, and he says, what's Sarah laughing for? She says, how can I have children? I'm an old woman. God changes the truth. And from here we derive that for the sake of peace, we change the truth. Even God doesn't tell Avram, you know, Sarah said you're an old man. You'd think Avram's such a pious person. What's the worst thing? He's an old man. He is. He's 100 years old. He's 99. But no. You see that even in old couples, even people who have been living together so long, you can make more shalom bayis if you say something positive like the angels. And God is careful to change. He says, Sarah said, I'm an old woman. How could I have more children? Is there anything that's beyond God's ability? I'll get back. You'll see it the next Yom Tov. Sarah's going to have a child. Avram asks her, why'd you laugh? And Sarah says, no, I didn't laugh. Now, in truth, when God was chastising Sarah, God was alluding to Avram, you know, you did wrong. It's like a mother-in-law who's sitting at the table and she sees her daughter-in-law doing something improper. So if she's smart, she doesn't say something to the daughter-in-law, she says something to her daughter. She tells her daughter, don't do that, and the daughter-in-law understands on her own. So too God doesn't tell Avram directly, what did you laugh for when you saw the prophecy? God tells him, why did Sarah laugh? And that's an indication to him that he also erred in laughing. And Sarah lies. Sarah says, no, I didn't laugh. She was scared. And from here we derive that women under fear are under more pressure than men. Their nature is that when they feel like the other side's upset at them, they take it much more to heart. So they're more apt to lie, and that's why in testimony we take that into account as well. So the angels look out onto Sodom, they're going to overturn it. And God tells Avram, I'm going to overturn it, because God has a rule that he doesn't do things unless he reveals it to his servants, the prophets. So he tells Avram, I'm going to overturn Sodom and Amorah. And Avram starts saying, God, in anger you destroy a tzaddik and a rasha. Maybe there are 50 pious people in the city. Will you destroy a city that are 50 tzaddikim in it? And God says, no. So if there are 50, I won't destroy it. So Avram understands there aren't 50. So he tries 45 and 40 and 30 and 20 and 10. And beyond 10, he realizes he can't do it. So even though they're very sinful, Avram doesn't want their destruction. The angels come to Sodom, and Lot has just been appointed judge of Sodom. Lot comes near them, and he says, do me a favor, quickly, hide. I'll show you a back route to my house. You'll be able to sleep by me, wash yourself, and then you'll go your way in the morning, because if the people here see you, they're very bad, the people of Sodom and Amorah. So even though there's a law against taking in guests, and Lot's own daughter was murdered because she helped guests, Lot is still adamant that he's trying to protect these newcomers to the city. And they say, no, we'll rest in the streets. And he begs them, no, come to me. And he's risking his life to take them in. And he makes them a feast, and he gives them matzahs, it's Pesach. And the people of Sodom surround the house. When they're in the middle of the meal, they were short on salt. So Lot's wife went out to get salt. And when she went out to get salt, she said to the neighbor, you know why I need salt? Because my husband's bringing these bad customs of taking in guests to our midst. She complained about the guests, and she complained that they needed more salt. So for that little bit of salt, she's going to ultimately pay for her life. And when she told the neighbor's wife, so she let everyone know, and they surrounded the city. Everyone surrounded the city, the whole nation. And they call out to Lot, and they say, why are the people who came to you tonight? Send them out. We want to know them. And you guys know what know them means biblically. So Lot comes out and closes the door behind them, and he says, my brothers, don't do bad. I have two daughters. They've both never been wed. They've never been with a man. I'll take them out, do with them whatever you guys want. But these men, you know, they came to my house. They're my responsibility. Please don't harm them. And they refuse. They say, who are you? You're a newcomer here. And they want to come forward and break down the door. And the angels bring Lot into the house, and they do a miracle. They cause all the people outside to be blind. And they tell Lot, tell us, who do you have around here? Son-in-law, your daughters, your children, whoever you have here, get out of here, because we're going to destroy this place. And here the angels make an error. They say, we are going to destroy the place, as though they have the power, because God has heard the great yell has come up before him. When that girl helped the poor, and they caught her, and they put her on a rooftop and smeared her with honey and let the bees sting her to death, her yelling came up to God, and God said, if they're so cruel, I'm going to destroy the Sodomites. And so God sent us to destroy the city. And Lot gets out of his house, and he runs to his sons-in-law, and he tells them, leave, God's going to destroy the city. And they think he's nuts. We can understand that. Now Lot comes back home, and he tries to amass his wealth, and the angels tell him, look, we got to go, it's almost sunrise, we got to go. And Lot is taking his time. He's trying to get another penny, another penny. And the angels say, nope, this ain't going to work. They grab his hand, his wife, his two daughters, and they take him out of the city. When they take him out, they say, run and don't look back and don't stand around here. Run to the mountains lest you get killed too. And Lot says, you know what? There's this. You guys were so kind to me. There's this city over here that's a younger city. They probably have less sin. Let me run there and live. And they say, fine, we won't destroy that city and we'll wait for you till you get to that city. He runs to that city, and on the way, his wife turns around and looks at the city, even though the angels told her not. She missed her daughters. She wanted to see what happened with her families. And she became a pillar of salt, just like she sinned with salt. She became a pillar of salt. And Avram awakens in the morning. He's righteous that he can look out at the destruction of the wicked. He sees Sodom and Amorah's destruction. And God remembered Avram. God didn't want Avram to be pained by the destruction. So God saved Lot by Avram's merit. And Lot was scared. Maybe when their time is up, this city will be overturned as well. So he changes his mind and he rushes up to the mountains with his daughters. They're in a cave, and God makes a miracle that there's wine in that cave. And the daughters speak between themselves and they say, you know, our father's an old man, and we saw God destroyed the land. There must be no man left to marry us out there. So let's give him wine to drink, and we'll live with him, and that way we'll have children. Otherwise, the world will be destroyed. So they give their father wine to drink, and the firstborn, the older daughter, goes and sleeps with her father. And Lot was drunk, but the next day he knew something had happened. So the next night he still wasn't careful. He still drank wine. And the younger one slept with him, and they both were tzaddikis. Ordinarily, a woman doesn't become pregnant for the first time. The first time a woman is with a man, nature has it that it's less likely she'll become pregnant. But these two, because their intent was for the sake of heaven, they became pregnant from the first time. And the first one had a child. She named him Moab, and from him came the Moabite nation. And the younger one was more modest. She didn't name him like the first one. Moab means from the father. She's clearly saying this one came from incest. The younger one is more modest. She calls him Ben Ami. He's from my nation. She's also indicating that they erred, but she's doing it in a more modest fashion. And that's why the Ammonites got preferential treatment with regard when the Jews were passing near them, as opposed to the Moabites. When we're traveling in the desert, God warns us with regard to the Ammonites. Them don't even scare them. The Moabites, when we pass by, we can pass by with our armor, even if that scares them. The Ammonites, we give preferential treatment to. We pass by and make it abundantly clear that we intend no harm. Avram is shamed. Everyone's talking. Look at Lot. Look at his daughters. They thought the whole world was destroyed. Everyone's talking about Lot, who went against the Noahide laws. He lived with his daughters. Avram is shamed. This is his nephew. So Avram travels away from there. Again, he comes to foreign territory, to Philistine territory, to Gerar. And he again says that Sarah is his sister. This time he doesn't ask her permission because she won't agree. She suffered the first time that he did it. But Avram says, she's my sister. And Avimelech again abducts Sarah. And God appears to Avimelech in a dream that night. Makes you wonder, if he abducted her, how come he's sleeping and having dreams? So God tells him, you're going to die for the woman you took. She's a married woman. And Avimelech says, God, what do you want? I did nothing wrong. He said she was my sister. I asked all the servants. They all said she was his sister. I asked all his workers. They all said she was his sister. Makes you wonder, hey buddy, why'd you ask so many people God, he said she was the sister. She said she was the sister. I'm clean. And God says, yeah, I know you have an excuse. So that's why I'm saving you from sinning. Give him back his wife. He is a Navi. He'll pray for you and you'll live. And if you don't give him back, you'll die. You and everything you own. Abimelech awakens early in the morning. He calls all his servants. They've all been punished. And they're all scared. And he calls Avram and he says, what did I do to you? Why'd you cause our kingdom to have such sin in their midst? And Avram tells him, I saw you weren't God-fearing people. A guy comes to the city. You ask him, do you need a place to stay? You ask him, do you want to know where the local supermarket is? The first thing you ask me is, who's the woman? So, of course, I had reason to be scared. That's the way you guys behave. I had reason to think that if you know she's my wife, you'll kill me and take her. And the truth is that she's my niece, which is like a sister. So I made a deal with her that when we travel, she'll say I'm her brother so that people don't kill me. So Avimelech gives a lot of gifts to Avram. And he tells Avram, you could live here wherever you want. When Pharaoh sent Sarah away, So Paro said, get out of my country, because I can't trust my people to be fair to you. I'll give you a gift, the land of Goshen. That's my gift to you. He gives them a deed to the land of Goshen. That's why the Jews, when they migrated down to Egypt, lived in the land of Goshen, because they legally owned that. But Abimelech, he knows that his people aren't as bad as the Egyptians, so he tells Avram, you guys could stick around here, wherever you want, live. And he tells Sarah, I gave your brother all these gifts, let that be a covering for your eyes, let that be a safe face for your honor. People will see it's not that there's something wrong with you, but rather because I couldn't take you. If I would have found something wrong with you, I wouldn't have given all these gifts. Avram prays for Avimelech, and when Avram prays for Avimelech, so Hashem heals Avimelech and the women of his home, and Hashem heals Sarah. Because we have a rule that whoever prays for someone else, God answers them first, if they need the same thing. What did God do to Avimelech's punishment? God had closed the wombs of Avimelech's wife and all the other women in his household. They all couldn't give birth. So now when Avram prays for them to be healed, so the first thing God does is he heals Sarah. Now Sarah can get pregnant. And then God heals Avimelech and his household. Sarah becomes pregnant and she has a child, and they name the child Yitzchak. Yitzchak gets a circumcision when he's 8 days old, and Avram's 100 years old now. A year has passed. All the kings hear that Sarah had a child and they don't believe it. So when Yitzchak is 2 years old and they make a party because he's going to stop nursing, so he's making a big party and all the kings come, and the wives come to Sarah and they say, we left our wet nurses home. Could you nurse our baby? So Sarah starts taking one baby after another and nurses them. And this was to show the miracle that she really had this child. The people were talking, they were saying, you know, they adopted an orphan, and they said they had a child. They adopted some baby. So God made it that Sarah could nurse so many babies, this way no one could say anything about Sarah. After the party, Sarah sees Yishmael. He's already 17 years old. This is 3 years have passed. He's 16 years old. No, 17 years old. And she sees that he's serving idols, he's shooting bow and arrow at Yitzchak, he's telling Yitzchak, you know, you must be, you're not really his son, you must be Avimelech's son, you know, all the years he couldn't have a child with her. Must be Avimelech bore you, you're not going to inherit Avram. So Sarah tells Avram, hey, send away the maid and her son, because I'm not waiting to have a fight with them over the inheritance. And Avram's upset at what Sarah said, and God tells Avram, don't be upset. Whatever Sarah tells you, listen to her, because Yitzchak is the one that's going to be called your offspring. And don't worry, I'm going to help the son of the maid. He'll also become a great nation. And Avram lives up to this test. He wakes up early in the morning. He takes a flask of water. He gives Hagar, puts it on her side. He takes the 17-year-old boy. He puts it on him on her his mother's shoulder. And he sends her away. What's he putting him on the shoulder for? So, Pasha Pshat is that maybe this was a custom of showing that go away, you guys aren't part of my inheritance. Maybe the child was ill. So they're traveling in the desert, and Avram, all he could give him was a flask of water. Well, Avram saw that his son was starting to do idol worship. So Avram said, I'm not giving you a penny. If you're going to become a pagan, you get nothing from this inheritance. Flask of water and be on your way. So now they've been traveling in the desert, and they run out of water. Yishmael is burning of heat. He's got fever. Hagar puts him under a bush, and she walks a distance and sits there and weeps. And God hears Yishmael's voice crying, and in heaven there's a ruckus. The angels say, don't help him. His children are going to hurt your children. And God says, but right now, does he have merits? And the angels have to concede, yes, he does. So God says, I judge a person the way he is now. And so an angel comes to Hagar, and he tells her, don't worry, God has heard his prayer the way he is there. Take him, hold his hand, he's going to be a great nation. And God makes a great well that would appear for the Jewish people in the desert, appear for Hagar, and give water for her and for Yishmael. And Yishmael grows up, and he becomes a bandit. So his mother takes him a wife from the Egyptian women. Avimelech comes with his chief general to Avram. He's heard that God's promised Avram that he's going to inherit the land, and he sees that Avram is exceptionally successful, and he's concerned. So we have this great man named Avram, and Avimelech comes to him and tells him, make a pact with me that for three generations you'll maintain kindness with us just as we have with you. And Avram makes a mistake. Avram tells him, I promise. And Avram rebukes him over the well that his servant stole. Abimelech says, I didn't know about this. He never said anything to me. I never heard about this till today. So Avram takes sheep and cattle and they make a treaty. And they set up these seven sheep as part of the treaty. And that's why the area is called Be'er Sheva. It says, you take these seven sheep. And that's a sign that I dug this well. And that's why the area, that area is called Be'er Sheva. They make the pact, and this pact harmed us ultimately. When we came to inherit the land, there were still offsprings from Abimelech, and because of that, we couldn't conquer the land of the Philistines right away. We couldn't conquer Jerusalem right away. Avram is living in the Philistine territory, and because he made this pact, he made a pact with someone who wasn't supposed to have a part of the land of Israel, and he agreed to give him a part of the land of Israel. For three generations, God sends this test to Avram, this uplifting test, and he tells him, please take your son, your single son that you love, Yitzchak, go to the land of Moriah and bring him up as an Ola on one of the mountains that I'll tell you. Now, Avram, initially God says, take your son. Avram says, which son? The single son. They're both single sons that you love. I love them both. So God says, take Yitzchak. V'lech lecha, just like when I told you lech lecha, it was for your benefit. When you went to the land of Israel, this is also for your benefit. Please live up to this test. It'll be to your benefit for years to come. And this test is happening around Rosh Hashanah time. This is a few days before Rosh Hashanah, 3 days beforehand. Avram travels for 3 days, and then on Rosh Hashanah, he sees from a distant Hara Moriah, the Temple Mount. And he asks the lad, you guys see anything? They say, we don't see anything. He asks Yitzchak, do you see anything? He says, yeah, I see the Shekhinah above that mountain. So Avram tells the lads, you guys are like the donkey. Sit with the donkey if you don't see the difference in that mountain and anything else. I'll go with the lad, we'll bow and come back to you. And from here our sages say a person should always speak positively, because Avram said positive, we'll bow and we'll come back. This came true. He did ultimately come back with Yitzchak alive. He's traveling, they're going towards the mountain with Avram and Yitzchak, and Yitzchak says, Dad, where's the sheep? And God said, and Avram says, well, either God will give us the sheep, or else God wants you. And Yitzchak says, fine, if that's what God said, I'm all for it. And they go together. They come there, Avram builds the altar, he sets up the wood, and Yitzchak says, Dad, you know, I might flinch when you approach me. It's not good. Do me a favor, bind me. So Avram binds Yitzchak, and that's why it's called Akedas Yitzchak, the binding of Yitzchak. He places him on the altar above the wood, and he takes the knife, and he's coming towards his son, and an angel calls out from heaven and says, Avram, Avram. And Avram says, I'm here, what do you want? And he says, don't extend your hand, don't touch the child. And Avram says, what do you mean? God told me yes to do it, and you're telling me not to do it. And the angel says, no, God didn't tell you to do it. God said, bring him up as an Ola. God never said sacrifice to Ola. Bring him up with the intent that he could be an Ola, but you never said to sacrifice. Now I know you're God-fearing and you didn't hold back your son, your single son, from me. And Avram looks up and he sees God really had a goat there waiting, and that goat was supposed to be sacrificed. But the Satan doesn't want that goat to come, so the Satan sends a bush, and the bush catches the goat in its horns. So Avram goes and frees the bush and brings it as an Ola instead of his son. And on Rosh Hashanah, when we blow the horn, when we blow the shofar, we're commemorating this chus of Avram and Yitzchak, and the fact that the ram was brought instead, but Avram was willing to even bring his son on this day of Rosh Hashanah. Avram names the place Hashem Yireh, that's the name he gives to the Temple Mount, and the angel says, I swear because you did this, you didn't hold your son back, I will bless you and multiply your children, and your children will inherit their enemies, and they'll be a source of blessing for the nations, because you listened to me. And Avram returns to Be'er Sheva. Avram hears that he's had a new niece born, and he hears that Rivka is born, and now it's time to think about Shidduchim for Yitzchak. When Avram returns from the Akedah, his wife Sarah has passed away, and Avram has to bury her, so he has to bargain with the people, and the people treat him with great honor. He tries to make the deal with Ephron, and in public Ephron says, I'll do whatever you want, and in private Ephron charges him a hefty price for Ma'aseh Machpelah. Ephron doesn't know it, but in Ma'aseh Machpelah are really buried Adam and Eve, and now Sarah is going to be buried there, and ultimately we're going to have four pairs of people there: Avram and Sarah, Yitzchak and Rivka, Yaakov and Leah. Avram pays full price, buries Sarah there, and then he calls his faithful servant and he says, please go out and bring me a wife for my son Yitzhak. And you have to make a deal with her that she comes back here, because Yitzhak ain't going there. So God should help you and go. Eliezer takes 10 camels. They're muzzled, the way Avram's camels are always muzzled, so as not to harm anyone else. He comes to Aram Naharaim. He sets up the camels and he prays to God. He says, help me out. Do kindness with my master Avram. I'm standing here and the girls are coming out. They're not being watched by their parents. They're going to be natural. They're outside the city. No one's looking. This is the time to see if the girl is really a good girl. I'm going to ask her for a drink, and she's going to see I'm so wealthy. I have my ten camels here. And if she's kind and she says, here, drink, and I'll even feed your camels, she's a girl that's filled with kindness and she's fitting for Yitzhak. He hasn't even finished saying this, and Rivka comes out. Rivka's the relative of Avram's. She's good looking, whereas the other girls were free and let themselves freely be taken by men. She was exceptionally careful that she kept herself pure. She wasn't yet 3 years old. She had just turned 3, and this ensured that she was 100% pure. She comes down and she fills the flask. She fills the earthenware vessel. She's Eliezer, the servant, sees that the water rises toward her. So he sees, she's a pious woman. He runs toward her and he says, could you give me something to drink from your pitcher? And she says, drink, my master. She quickly gives him to drink. She finishes giving him to drink. And she says, I'll draw water for your servant, for your camels as well, till they finish drinking. And she goes to draw the water. She draws water for all his camels. And he's looking. He wants to see, has he been successful? When the camels finish drinking, he sees she's so pious. He takes a gold nose ring and 2 bracelets. And he tells her, whose daughter are you? She says, is there a place in your father's house for us to rest? And she says, I'm the daughter of Besuel, who's the son of Milcah, the daughter of Nahor. And we have a lot of food. You could come rest by us. So he bows to Hashem that made him successful. And when she hears that he is the servant of Avram, she runs back to her mother and tells her what's going on. When her brother Lavan hears this, so Lavan, he's a guy who was always interested in money. When he sees all the stuff that his sister got, he says, boy, let's go see how we could swindle this guy out of his money. He comes out and he sees Eliezer handling the camels as though they were pussycats. He sees Eliezer, who is also Og, a giant, and he sees, boy, I can't take this guy on. So he tells him, come, in blessing of Hashem, why stand outside? I cleared the house of all our idols. You guys can come now. There's room for the camels as well. They come in, they give him to eat, they put poison in his food, an angel comes and switches the food. Besuel eats the poison and dies. So Rivka just lost her father. And Eliezer asks for Rivka, they agree. The next morning when he wants to leave, so Lavan and the mother say, no way, she's still young, give her time. And Eliezer says, nope. God's made me successful, now it's time to go. So they say, we'll ask Rivka, and Rivka says, yeah, I'm going. Rivka goes with him. They come, as they're approaching, Yitzhak is going out. His mother had passed away a short while ago. His father wanted to remarry Hagar, so Yitzhak was traveling out to bring Hagar back so his father could remarry her. And as he's going out there, he's praying the Mincha prayer. Rivka sees him. She covers herself. That's our custom, that a kala covers herself as she's approaching the chasen just before the chuppah. And Eliezer is a good shatran. He starts selling Yitzchak. He tells him all the pious things about Rivka. And Yitzchak marries her. And after the marriage, he loves her. And from here we derive that love evolves after marriage. Avram has many more children with Hagar, who is also known as Keturah. And before his passing, Avram sends those children away. He gives them the gifts and he says, be well, but it's very clear that they're not going to inherit him. He removes competition from Yitzchak. Yishmael multiplies, and now Yitzchak, who's been married to Rivka, prays to Hashem that his wife should have children, and God accepts the prayer, and Rivka becomes pregnant. It's an exceptionally difficult pregnancy, so she goes and she asks a rabbi, hey, what's going on? So shame, the rabbi tells her, you know, God told me to tell you, you have two great nations in your stomach, and they're going to be very different, and they're going to constantly be at ends with one another. When one is up, the other one's down, and ultimately you should know that the older one will serve the younger one. She gives birth, and the first one comes out all red, he's covered with hair, everyone calls him Esav, he's like a field. And then his younger brother comes out smooth, and he's holding on to his heel, and they name him Yaakov. When they're born, so Yitzchak sees Esav all red, he says, I can't circumcise him, maybe he's not healthy yet. And he waits, and he waits, and he waits, and then he says, if we waited this long, we'll do like Yishmael, we'll circumcise him at 13. At 13, Esav refuses, and so Esav grows up uncircumcised. They grow up, and Esav is very cunning, he makes himself look like a big tzaddik, but really he's a hunter, and a murderer, and a rapist, and a thief. And Yaakov is maintaining his pious ways, learning in the tents. And Yitzchak doesn't recognize the faults of Esav. Esav always brings him good food, and Esav always tricks him into thinking he's a good guy. And Rivka sees beyond all this. The prophet has also told her that ultimately Yaakov is going to be on top. So one day Avram passes away. On that day, Esav is going to do his first murder. He's going to murder Nimrod. So God had promised Avram that he'll pass away in peace. And that's not passing away in peace if he sees his grandson a murderer. So God has Avram pass away now, 5 years earlier, 175. And Yaakov is making lentils for his father Yitzchak, who's sitting Shiva. The custom is that when a person loses a relative, we give him something round to eat to remind him that just like the thing is round, so too it's a cycle in the world. Everyone dies. Avram died. Moshe died. Everyone dies. It's a cycle in the world. That's the way God created the world. And we also remind them, just like a circle is whole, it's closed, so too sometimes we have to know to close our mouths. At times when things are difficult and we have a hard time swallowing what God's dished out at us, so those are the times when we have to know to be silent, and with time we'll be able to accept it better. So Yaakov is preparing the lentils, and Esav comes from the field. He's tired. He's just murdered. He's just raped a young engaged girl. And he tells Yaakov, you got some red stuff there, pour it down my throat, I'm tired, I'm hungry. And that's when Esav gains the nickname Edom. So Yaakov says, okay, here, have some bread, I'll give you to eat, but if you want my lentils, then I want you to sell me your rights to the firstborn. And Esav says, well, what's involved in the rights to the firstborn? And Yaakov says, well, the firstborn is going to be the servant of God. So Esav says, tell me something, do these servants of God live to eternity? They all die anyways. What's the difference? Why should I be a servant of God? Ultimately, I'm going to die anyways, just like if I am or I'm not. What do I need that for? You can have it. So Yaakov says, promise me. And Esav promises. And Yaakov says, okay, sell me your rights to the Maror Samachpelah. And Esav sells it. And he says, okay, sign over here. And Esav signs. And Yaakov gives him more bread, and he gives him lentils, and he gives him to drink. And Esav walks out and he laughs and he says, ah, my stupid brother Yaakov, look at what I got, what did he get? All he got was responsibility and I got a free meal. There's a famine, and Yitzchak travels to Philistine territory. He's traveling and he has these two 15-year-old children. And God tells him, don't go down to Egypt, you were sanctified. You can't leave the land of Israel. I'll be with you, you'll be blessed. Yitzchak lives there, and the people ask him, where's your wife? And Yitzchak says, no, Rivka's my sister. He's scared of saying she's his wife. Avimelech, he's been tricked once. This time he's a little bit more careful. He looks through the window and he sees Yitzchak and Rivka being intimate. So he calls Yitzchak in and he says, what'd you do to me? She's your wife, how'd you say she's my sister? And Yitzchak says, I was scared that you'll kill me for her. So Avimelech sets out a decree, no one's allowed to touch him and his wife. No one's allowed to touch Yitzchak and his wife. Yitzchak is extremely successful. It's a year of famine, and Yitzchak is extremely successful. And the people start being jealous of him. So they start filling up the wells that his family has dug. And Avimelech tells Yitzchak, you leave. You've been too successful. This isn't good. People admire you more than they admire me. So Avimelech feels the competition. Yitzchak travels, and he redigs the wells that his father had dug, and he renames them like his father had named them. And Avimelech comes to Yitzchak and he tells him, look, Yitzchak first tells Avimelech, what are you guys coming for? You hated me. You kicked me out of your land. And Avimelech says, yeah, but we see that God is with you. We want to make a pact with you. They make a feast and they renew the pact that was with Avram. And Esav's 40 years old. He marries sinful women. Yitzchak is blinded by the idol worship that Esav's daughters do. Esav's wives, I'm sorry, they serve incense to their idols, and that causes Yitzchak to be blind. And he calls his son Esav and he tells him, look, I'm getting old, it's Pesach now, I'm 1 year older, I'm nearing the age of my father, and I don't know when I'm going to die. It could be any day now. Once a person approaches his father's age, so a person has to take care that he might die. So he tells him, I want to give you a blessing, bring me some good food, it's Pesach today, and I'll bless you before I die. Rivka hears this, and Esav's gone out hunting to bring fresh food for his father. Our sages say that we rejoice in a Yom Tov by eating fresh meat. Fresh meat means fresh meat. We never eat fresh meat. We don't even know the taste of fresh meat. So Esav wants to honor his father. He goes out to bring fresh meat. Esav excels in kibud av va'em. That's his great merit. He honors his father. So Rivka tells Yaakov, listen up, son. I'm telling you, you're supposed to get those blessings. Bring me 2 sheep that I'm entitled to. I get 2 sheep from your father every day, and I'll make your father the delicacies he loves. I'll bring it to him, I'll eat, and I'll bless you before he dies. And Yaakov says, hey, my father will be able to figure it out. I'm a smooth and Esav's hairy. Maybe he'll feel me, he'll want to give me a kiss, and he'll see it's me, he'll curse me, he won't bless me. So Rivka tells him, don't worry, I'm responsible. If there's a curse, it'll come on me. But listen, go do it. So he brings her the food. She makes the delicious food that his father loves. She puts Esav had the special clothes that God created for Adam and Eve when they were naked. So those clothes had passed down until Nimrod stole them. And Esav, when he murdered Nimrod, Esav took them. Esav knew his wives couldn't be trusted, so he entrusted it to his mother Rivka. Rivka took those clothes and she told Yaakov, wear these clothes. These are clothes from the Garden of Eden that Esav always wears. Yaakov wears those clothes. She takes the hides of the goats and puts it on his arms and on his neck so that he'll feel hairy. And maybe he was wearing a long sleeve shirt, and maybe he was wearing a high collar, but through the shirt and through the collar it felt like there was hair on him. So he brings the food and he brings it to his father, and he speaks gently and he says, please get up, I have delicious food for you so you could bless me. And Yitzchak says, how'd you make it so fast? And he says, God help me out. And Yitzchak suspects, Esav doesn't speak that way. He says, come here, let me feel you. Is that you, Esav? And Yaakov comes near his father. Don't forget, Yaakov and Esav are twins. And Yitzchak says, you know, you sound like Yaakov, but your hands feel like Esav. But he couldn't recognize him, so he blesses him. He eats the food, and he kisses Yaakov. And when Yaakov comes near, he smells that garment that's from the Garden of Eden. He smells the smell of Eden, and he gives him the great blessing that he'll be successful in this world. And the nations will bow to him, his brother will be subservient to him, and no one can get away with cursing him or blessing him. Whoever curses him gets cursed, whoever blesses him gets blessed. Yaakov's on his way out, and he sees Esav approaching, so he hides behind the door. Esav comes into the room, and Yaakov slips out. And Esav has made delicious food. Now, God's helped Yaakov out. Every time Esav caught a deer, he'd want to catch one more to make the food, and an angel would come and let the first one go. So each time, he'd catch one and lose one, catch one and lose one. So God was detaining him. And now, he finally made it, and he comes and he says, Dad, get up! Eat my food so you can bless me. And Yitzchak says, who are you? When Esav entered the room, Yitzchak felt Gehenna entering the room. So he says, I'm your firstborn, I'm Esav! Esav's lying. Esav sold his rights to the firstborn. When Yitzchak hears this, he's very scared. If he's my firstborn Esav, who'd I give the blessing to? Who gave me such delicious food? Let him be blessed. With him I felt Gan Eden, with you I feel Gehenna. And when Esav hears this, he lets out a great yell, and he says, bless me too, my father. And he tells him, no, your brother tricked you out. He took your blessings. And Esav says, oh, he tricked me twice. So Yaakov says, Yitzchak says, what do you mean tricked you twice? He says, well, he bought the rights to the firstborn, and now he took my blessing. And Yitzchak says to himself, oh, if Yaakov took the rights to the firstborn, then he really wasn't entitled to these blessings. And Esav begs and begs, and Yitzchak says, what do you want? I made him the master. What can I give you? So Esav says, well, you have no blessings left for me. And he starts weeping. And Yitzchak blesses him that he should have worldly goods, and live off the sword. And when the Jewish people don't live up to the Torah, then he'll be able to overpower them. And Esav harvests an enmity towards Yaakov for the blessings that he stole, and he says, I can't wait till my father dies, and then I'll kill Yaakov. And Rivka is told with Ruach HaKodesh what Esav was thinking, so she tells Yaakov, look, Esav's already, in his eyes, you're a dead man. So listen to me, run to my brother Lavan, stay there for a while until your brother calms down, and then I'll send word and I'll tell you to come back. Why should I lose you both in one day? And she spoke prophecy here. They really were both buried on the same day. Rivka tells Yitzhak, you know, life ain't worth living if Yaakov marries a girl like Esav did. These girls are worthless. They're terrible. So tell him to go get a girl from our family. So Yitzhak calls Yaakov and he blesses him and he tells him, don't marry one of these Canaanite girls. Go out to the family and marry a girl from Besuah, from your mother's family, and God should bless you and give you the blessing of the forefathers. You're going to be the continuum. You'll inherit the land of Israel as God blessed Avram. And Yaakov travels out, and he's going to get a shidduch. Esav sees that his father doesn't like the Canaanite girls, so he marries a girl from Yishmael, who was sinful just like his previous wives. Yaakov is traveling to Haran, and that's where we're going to pick up, Bezrat Hashem, next time, with Yaakov's dream of the ladder.